ولما توجه تلقاء مدين قال عسى ربي أن يهديني سواء السبيل.
When, after his departure from Egypt, Moses, peace be upon him, headed towards Midian, he said, I hope my Lord will show me the right path. When, after his departure from Egypt, Moses, peace be upon him, headed towards Midian.
Here the biblical account is in agreement with the Quranic one, in that both state that after leaving Egypt, Moses, peace be upon him, proceeded to Midian. The Talmud, however, relates the absurd story of Moses, peace be upon him, fleeing to Abyssinia and becoming a great favorite of the king there. After the death of that king, Moses, peace be upon him, took over his mantle and was further given the hand of the late king's widow in marriage. Moses ruled there for 40 years but never consummated his marriage with the king's widow. After 40 years, she complained to her nobles that Moses had not had conjugal relations with her and that he did not worship their gods. Upon this, the nobles dethroned him and sent him away honorably with a great many presents and an abundance of wealth. Moses, peace be upon him, then proceeded to Midian from Abyssinia, whereafter the events narrated in the following verses took place. Moses, peace be upon him, was then 67 years old. The absurdity of this account is evident by virtue of the fact that it mentions that Assyria, northern Iraq at that time was under the suzerainty of Abyssinia. It also mentions that both Moses, peace be upon him, and the king of Assyria prior to Moses' kingship carried out military campaigns to suppress the rebellious Assyrians. Now, anyone who has even a smattering conversance with history or geography can look at the map and see that Abyssinian rule over Assyria and military campaigns by the Abyssinians against Assyria were only possible if Ethiopia also ruled over Egypt, Palestine, and Syria, or if the whole of Arabia was under their dominion, or else if the Abyssinian navy was so powerful that it could cross the Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf to conquer Iraq. History, however, does not tell us that this was the case at all. The Abyssinians never controlled these countries, and their navy was never so powerful. This only shows how distorted and inaccurate the Israelites' knowledge of their own history really was. The Quran corrects their mistakes and presents the true picture of things. Notwithstanding this, Christian and Jewish Orientalists do not hesitate to claim that the Quran took its historical accounts from Israelite traditions.
He said, I hope my Lord will show me the right path.
That is, the path that would safely take him to Midian. In those days, Midian was not a part of Pharaoh's kingdom. Egypt did not have control over the entire Sinai Peninsula, but only over its western and southern parts. The eastern and western shores of the Gulf of Aqaba, where the Midianites lived, were not under Egyptian control. Hence, why Moses, peace be upon him, headed towards Midian, which was the nearest territory independent of Egyptian control. But to get there, he had to pass through Egyptian territory and cross various police and military checkposts. He therefore prayed to Allah to lead him to the path which would safely take him to Midian.
وَلَمَّا وَرَدَ مَاءَ مَدْيَنَ وَجَدَ عَلَيْهِ أُمَّةً مِّنَ النَّاسِ يَسْقُونَ وَوَجَدَ مِن دُونِهِمُ امْرَأَتَيْنِ تَذُودَانِ قَالَ مَا خَطْبُكُمَا قَالَتَا لَا نَسْقِي حَتَّى يُصْدِرَ الرِّعَاءُ وَأَبُونَا شَيْخٌ كَبِيرٌ.
When he arrived at the spring of Midian, he found there a crowd of people watering their flocks, and he found apart from them two women holding their flocks back. He asked the women, "What is it that troubles you?" They said, "We cannot water our flocks until the shepherds take their flocks away, and our father is a very old man." When he arrived at the spring of Midian,
according to Arab traditions, the place where Moses, peace be upon him, arrived was a few miles to the south of Makna on the western coast of the Gulf of Aqaba. It is presently called Al-Bad, which is a small town. I visited it in December 1959 on my way to Aqaba from Tabuk. The residents of the town told me that they had heard from their elders that this is where ancient Midian was located. All modern and ancient explorers and geographers from Josephus to Burton also agree that this is the place where Midian was located. Nearby is a place presently called Maga'ir Shoaib or Magarat Shoaib, where there are a few monuments in the Talmudic style of architecture. About a mile or a mile and a half away, there are a few ruins among which we saw two dry wells. The locals told us, though with some uncertainty, that one of the two wells was located at the spot where Moses, peace be upon him, had watered the goats. Abu al-Fida, in his Taqwim al-Budan and Yaqut al-Hamwawi, in his Mu'jam al-Buldan, have written on the authority of Abu Zaid al-Ansari that the locals too identified the place where Moses' well was located. This indicates that the tradition about the well was transmitted across the centuries, and therefore one can say with a reasonable degree of confidence that this is the place mentioned in the Quran.
He asked the women, "What is it that troubles you?" They said, "We cannot water our flocks until the shepherds take their flocks away, and our father is a very old man."
Those women told Moses, peace be upon him, that being women, they could not be aggressive with the shepherds in securing water for their animals. Furthermore, their father was too old to water the animals, and there was no male member in the family who could do so. Hence, women, willy-nilly, had to undertake that task, obliged as they were to wait until the shepherds had left before they could water their animals. All this was stated very succinctly and is indicative of the customary female modesty which prevented them from saying much to a male stranger. They said all this in order to prevent the stranger from forming an ill opinion of their family, as one in which the menfolk stayed home and sent their womenfolk outdoors on different errands. There are many popular traditions which identify the father of these women with the Prophet Shoaib, peace be upon him. However, there is nothing in the Quran directly or indirectly which would justify such an identification. Shoaib, peace be upon him, for sure is mentioned many times in the Quran. Now, had the father of these women been Shoaib, peace be upon him, there is no reason why he should not have been mentioned here as such. True, we find his name used in connection with this verse in some ahadith. But both Ibn Jarir al-Tabari and Ibn Kasir concur that none of these ahadith is sound. Ibn Kasir categorically states that the traditions which mention Shoaib in Prophet Musa's story are not sound. As for Tabari, he merely mentions that the traditions are so diverse that his personal opinion is that one should go by the famous saying that their father was Prophet Shoaib, peace be upon him, until one comes across any evidence that would prompt him to forsake this opinion. Hence, why the Quranic commentators of the stature of Abdullah ibn Abbas, Hasan al-Basri, Abu Ubaidah, and Sayyid ibn Jubair have mentioned in this regard the names of those used in the Talmud and other Israelite sources. Had the Prophet, peace be upon him, clearly mentioned Shoaib's, peace be upon him, name, these eminent scholars could not have mentioned any other names. The Bible calls this person Ru'el at one place and Jethro at another. Exodus 2:16-18, 3:1, 18:5, and states that he was the priest of Midian. In the Talmud, he is variously called Reuel, Jethro, and Hobab. The opinion of contemporary Jewish scholars is that Jethro was a synonym for His Excellency, and that the real name of these women's father was Reuel or Hobab. Likewise, there is disagreement about the meaning of Kohen Midian. Some say it means priest, while others contend that it means prince. See the Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 7, paragraphs 173-4. According to the Talmud, Reuel used to visit Pharaoh from time to time before Moses' birth, and Pharaoh had confidence in his knowledge. When the royal council started its deliberations about how to suppress the Israelites, and it was decided to kill newborn male babies, Reuel tried to prevent Pharaoh from doing so. He warned him against the consequences of such an evil deed and suggested that, if he felt that the Israelites were such a burden to him, then he should let them go to Canaan, the land of their ancestors. This infuriated Pharaoh to the extent that he turned Reuel out in disgrace. As a result, Reuel returned to his homeland, Midian, and settled there. As for Reuel's religion, the commonly held belief is that, like Moses, peace be upon him, he was a follower of Abraham's faith. For exactly like Moses, peace be upon him, who was a descendant of Isaac, peace be upon him, Reuel was a descendant of Midian, the son of Abraham, peace be upon him. Perhaps it was because of this lineage that Reuel tried to prevent Pharaoh killing the Israelites and so provoked his wrath. Nizam al-Din al-Hasan ibn Hussein al-Kumi al-Nisaburi, quoting Hassan al-Basri, says the following about Reuel. He was a Muslim. He had embraced the religion of the Prophet Shu'aib, peace be upon him. The Talmud says that Reuel used to publicly condemn the idolatry of the Midianites, and it was for this reason that they turned against him.
فَسَقَى لَهُمَا ثُمَّ تَوَلَّى إِلَى الظِّلِّ فَقَالَ رَبِّ إِنِّي لِمَا أَنزَلْتَ إِلَيَّ مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَقِيرٍ.
On hearing this, Moses, peace be upon him, watered their flocks for them, and then returned in a shaded place and said, My Lord, I am truly in great need of any good that you might send down to me.
فَجَاءَتْهُ إِحْدَاهُمَا تَمْشِي عَلَى اسْتِحْيَاءٍ قَالَتْ إِنَّ أَبِي يَدْعُوكَ لِيَجْزِيَكَ أَجْرَ مَا سَقَيْتَ لَنَا فَلَمَّا جَاءَهُ وَقَصَّ عَلَيْهِ الْقَصَصَ قَالَ لَا تَخَفْ نَجَوْتَ مِنَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ.
Soon thereafter, one of the two women came to him, walking bashfully, and said, My father invites you, that he may reward you for your having watered our flocks for us. When Moses, peace be upon him, came to him and narrated to him the whole of his story, he said, Have no fear, you are now safe from the iniquitous people. Soon thereafter, one of the two women came to him, walking bashfully, and said,
Umar explained this sentence in the following manner. She came walking modestly, with her face covered with a part of her outer garment, unlike immodest women who are prone to loiter at night, who unabashedly find their way everywhere, and who are ever ready to go out. See Alusi Ru' al-Ma'ni, his comments on Surah Al-Qasas 28 verse 25. Several traditions which say substantively the same have been quoted by Sa'id ibn al-Mansur, Ibn Jarir al-Tabari, Ibn Abi Hatim and Ibn al-Mundhir on the authority of Umar and are supported by authentic chains of transmission. This throws light on the Islamic concept of modesty, which was derived by the companions of the Prophet, peace be upon him, from the teachings of the Quran and from the training and instruction they had received at the hands of the Prophet, peace be upon him. This concept of modesty was opposed to a woman's exposure of her face before men who were unrelated to her. It was also opposed to the unabashed wandering around of women in public. Significantly, Umar's words clearly link modesty with women's covering of their face and immodesty with exposing it.
My father invites you, that he may reward you for your having watered our flocks for us.
She also said this out of modesty. It seems that she considered it necessary to explain why she came alone to an unrelated male. Otherwise, if a gentleman had helped a woman in distress, it was not at all appropriate for her to offer him a reward. But the willingness to follow her by a man of Moses' stature, even after hearing about the promised reward, throws light on another aspect of the situation. It shows Moses' state of desperation at that time. He had left Egypt suddenly and without any provisions. It must also have taken him 8 days to get to Midian. He would therefore have been hungry, thirsty, and quite worn out. He must also have been quite concerned about finding shelter in a city where he was a stranger. He must also have been in need of a compassionate and sympathetic person who would provide him with protection. Hence, why Moses did not hesitate to go to that lady's father, even after hearing that he would receive some reward for the little service that he had rendered. he might have thought that this offer of reward was in fact an answer to his supplication to God a little while previously, and that if he did not accept the invitation merely so as to make a show of his self-respect, this would essentially amount to turning down a God-sent hospitality.
قالت إحداهما يا أبت استأجر إن خير من استأجرت القوي الأمين.
One of the two women said, "Father, employ this man in your service. The best whom you might employ is he who is strong and trustworthy." One of the two women said, "Father, employ this man in your service. The best whom you might employ is he who is strong and trustworthy."
The girl did not necessarily say this to her father during the first meeting between him and Moses, peace be upon him. Most probably, her father would have asked the stranger to stay with them for a day or two, and it was possibly during this day that the daughter suggested this to her father. The suggestion meant that because of their father's old age, the womenfolk had to go out on various errands, as they had no brother who could relieve them. The hint to the father was that he should employ Moses, peace be upon him, because he was strong and hardworking, as well as trustworthy and honest. It was obviously out of his goodness that Moses, peace be upon him, had helped them earlier, and while he did so, he kept his gaze away from them.
قال إني أريد أن أنكحك إحدى بنتي هاتين على أن تأجرني ثماني حجج فإن أتممت عشرا فمن عندك وما أريد أن أشق عليك ستجدني إن شاء الله من الصالحين.
Her father said to Moses, peace be upon him, "I want to marry one of these two daughters of mine to you if you serve me for 8 years. But if you complete 10 years, that will be of your own accord, but not an obligation. I do not intend to treat you harshly. If Allah wills, you will find me an upright man." Her father said to Moses, peace be upon him,
"It is also not necessary that the father would have said this to Moses, peace be upon him, immediately after hearing his daughter's suggestion. Most probably, he would have thought about it for some time, and eventually have arrived at the conclusion that although he might be a person of good character, it was not appropriate to keep him in the house where his grown-up daughters were living. If he was an upright, cultured, and educated person who hailed from a known and respectable family, and he must have inferred this from Moses' story, why should he not stay and become his son-in-law? After arriving at this conclusion, he must have talked to Moses, peace be upon him, at some appropriate moment." Here again, the Israelites have done woeful injustice to their most illustrious prophet, their greatest benefactor and hero. The Talmud says, "And Moses, peace be upon him, lived with Reuel, and he looked with favor upon Zipporah, the daughter of his host, and married her." See H. Polano, The Talmud Selections, page 133. According to another Jewish tradition mentioned in the Jewish Encyclopedia, on his arrival at Midian, Moses, peace be upon him, told his whole story to Jethro, who recognized him as the man destined to destroy the Egyptians. He therefore took Moses prisoner, peace be upon him, in order to deliver him to Pharaoh. Moses, peace be upon him, was imprisoned in a deep dungeon in Jethro's house, and received as food only small portions of bread and water. He would have died of hunger had not Zipporah, to whom Moses, peace be upon him, had before this captivity, made an offer of marriage by the well, devised a plan by which she no longer went out to pasture the sheep, but remained at home to attend to the household, being thereby enabled to supply Moses, peace be upon him, with food without her father's knowledge. After 10 or 7 years, Zipporah reminded her father that he had at one time cast a man into the dungeon, who must have died long ago, but if he were still living, he must be a just man whom God had kept alive by a miracle. Jethro went to the dungeon and called Moses, peace be upon him, who answered immediately. As Jethro found Moses praying, he really believed that he had been saved by a miracle and liberated him, and gave him the virtuous Zipporah as his wife. The Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 9, paragraphs 48-9. The question one inevitably asks then is, are the Western Orientalists who are ever on the lookout for Quranic sources blind to the vast difference between the Quranic and Israelite narrations of this incident?
قال ذلك بيني وبينك أيما الأجلين قضيت فلا عدوان علي والله على ما نقول وكيل.
Moses, peace be upon him, replied, "So that is agreed between me and you. Whichever of the two terms I fulfill, I trust that I shall not be wronged. Allah is a witness over the covenant we are committing ourselves to." Moses, peace be upon him, replied, "So that is agreed between me and you. Whichever of the two terms I fulfill, I trust that I shall not be wronged. Allah is a witness over the covenant we are committing ourselves to."
Some scholars have interpreted this conversation between Moses, peace be upon him, and his would-be father-in-law as an offer and acceptance of a marriage contract. They have also initiated a meaningless debate about whether rendering service to the father-in-law could be considered as the dower for his daughter's marriage, and whether or not such conditions could legitimately form part of the marriage contract. The fact, however, is that the Quranic verses in question are quite clear that this was not a marriage contract. It was rather an initial discussion, the type that takes place anywhere in the world in connection with a marriage proposal. How could it be a marriage contract when it had not been decided which one of the two daughters was to be given in marriage? The gist of the conversation is that the father expressed his readiness to give one of his daughters in marriage to Moses on condition that Moses, peace be upon him, lived with him and helped him with his household duties. This for 8 or 10 years, because the father was an old man without any male issue who could manage his affairs. All that he had were his daughters, whom he had to send outdoors to manage his various affairs. He desired, therefore, that Moses, peace be upon him, should become his son-in-law and his right hand. If Moses, peace be upon him, could undertake this responsibility and affirm that he had no plans to depart with his wife immediately after the marriage, then Reuel would be willing to give one of his daughters in marriage. Moses, peace be upon him, in need of refuge, accepted the suggestion. It is quite obvious that this was a premarital agreement between the two parties. Thereafter, the real marriage contract would have been worked out according to the prevailing customs, and in which there would have been some provision for a dower. There is thus no reason to conclude that Moses, peace be upon him, was prepared to stay in his service as a part of the dower contract.